Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider, and joined by co-host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns. Our support is growing over there every single day. We really appreciate the support over on our Twitter page. And if you're not already, go right now and make sure to follow at Locked On PHX Suns. So today, Brendan, we are back after last night's recap episode. The Suns lost pretty convincingly last night in Golden State. It wasn't really a surprise to me, but today we're going to be talking more about general Suns topics the first three games and look a little bit ahead at the very end there to the Lakers game tomorrow night, which will be a really fun game. I think Brendan and I will both be there for the podcast, which we'll do live from Talk Series Arena. But we might as well start with our first topic here, Brendan, which is our biggest takeaways, I guess our biggest disappointments, but also our biggest standouts. So let's go over our standouts first. And I'll throw it your way first. Who's been your biggest standout through three Sun games?
I mean, people that are listening won't be surprised at all to hear this, but it's the guy who I think has been far away the Sun's best offensive player through three games, and that's TJ Warren. He has been pretty incredible. Like, no matter how you slice it, he has completely surpassed expectations, at least for me. I don't know anyone who expected this from Warren this year after, I think, you know, personally, and I think a lot of us were getting to the point where it just felt like this was just who he was, the guy that we saw last year. It kind of felt like even though he's young, he just hadn't really changed that much. He kind of just got really good at what he was used to doing on the court on offense, especially last year. And he didn't, despite playing more minutes, getting a more consistent role, didn't really do anything incredibly special besides just being efficient and going out there and scoring. But to see him this year come in, bombing away from three, accepting a new role, playing a new position, it's been pretty awesome to see and very unexpected. I think you can tell me if you disagree, but and then I can go into some stats to support it. But I just think it's kind of hard to be more excited by anyone than TJ with how well he's played.
I think, to be honest, if the Suns were on had a winning record instead of what they are now, I think TJ would be getting serious love as far as most improved player goes and even sixth man of the year goes, because like you said, Brent, his three-point shot, his stroke overall was completely different than last year. Shout out to him, and Igor Kokoschkov, whoever was there helping him out fixing his shot, because I never thought we'd be typing this out. If you guys know, over on Bright Side of the Sun, I actually wrote a story 2 months ago around this time that said TJ Warren is probably the odd man out in the Phoenix Suns roster, and I look pretty stupid right now for saying that, but he's really blowing away.
Well, it looks that way. I mean, you're not wrong. Like, that's how it seemed after the draft, after free agency. They added two guys, really high caliber players at his position.
Yeah, I mean, and also I don't think either of us expected Josh Jackson to really regress like he has a little back to the first game, but we'll get into him a little bit later. But really quickly on TJ, he's also one of my biggest standouts. No surprise to anyone listening out there. And also, I did this really quick comparison, Brendan, before we got in the air, and I found it kind of stunning how similar these guys are for three games. And it's TJ Warren and Chris Middleton, which I never thought would be happening. And their PERs, TJ Warren has a 29.4 PER, Chris Middleton has a 25.7. True shooting percentage, Chris Middleton has a 75.9 true shooting percentage, which is amazing. But TJ Warren has 70.2 true shooting percentage.
And they always Warren's been better than Booker. If you just look statistically.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Across the board, efficiency. And also, if you look here, assist percentage, TJ has a 16.4 assist percentage, and that's never happened before.
Yeah, it's double what he was last year, just for perspective for people out there. Last year, he was around 7 and 8% assists while he's on the court. That's pretty incredible for a guy who playmaking was not his strength by any means last year.
Oh, definitely. And if we want to go a little bit further before I pass it back over to you, they're VORPs as well. I know value over replace player, it's three games down. I'm not really trying to do much here. Just to paint a picture of how shocking TJ's developments have been, his VORP is 0.2, and that leads the Suns right now. Chris Middleton, for example, like we're using, 0.3. So a guy like Chris Middleton, I wasn't expecting to compare to TJ Warren, but it's stunning how he's improved so much, because he's improved as a defender, he's improved as a shooter, he's improved as a facilitator. I don't know what kind of leap to explain here. It's three games. I don't want to get overhyped here about TJ Warren, but if this continues here for the next 6 or so weeks, Brent, I think it might be legit.
Yeah, it looks real, because it's not like one game. You know, you worry like 3 games in if one game is a complete outlier, but he's been pretty consistent. He's kind of put together the same game every night. And I think I buy it for now. And I think the offensive system is really helping him. I think that he's benefiting from the spacing. And I wrote down last night, and I didn't even bring it up in our recap, but if he plays like this, we're going to talk about Jackson, how he's hurting the team on his own. But I think if you expect that Jackson does pick it up a little bit, which I think you kind of have to, they might be playable together in a way that they weren't last year. But yeah, I mean, to go a little bit into the numbers, I have a little bit different than you or people who might be looking at Basketball Reference, because I use Cleaning the Glass to put all the stats together, and they take out garbage time. So obviously the Suns have had 2 games where garbage time was almost the entire fourth quarter. So it's a little bit lower, some of the numbers are. But yeah, TJ, we talked about the assist rate, but he has a 26.6% usage. So he's still getting shots up, obviously, in a big way off the bench, even with the sixth man role this year, not starting like he did for, I think, 65 games he started last year. And 33% of his total shots have come from deep. That's I think, the biggest one. I think that's like the most indicative thing, that a full third of his shots are coming from deep already after 3 games. And it's been, like we said last night, at least 4 attempts in every game. It's not like he threw up 12 of them in the first game and hasn't taken one since.
Is that just, I know it's kind of the easy thing to say here, but are you kind of shocked as far as how TJ's hitting these threes out of volume too? Because per 100 possessions, TJ's shooting 9.7 threes per game, and his career high per 100 possessions coming into the season was 2.7.
Yeah, I don't even know how to explain it, but I think the offensive system is a big part of it. He's getting open shots in the flow of the offense in a way that he wasn't before. But I also think the fact that he's able to fit into that system is somewhat of a surprise too. I'm sure, I know I read your article back 2-3 months ago, whatever it was, that you just referenced at the beginning, but I don't remember if you said it there, but I know we talked about it in the podcast. It's not just like there were guys above him in the rotation, because that's not necessarily a bad thing. What really stood out to me as something that might prevent him from being super effective under the new coaching staff was just, can his style really mesh with what they're going to want to do? The ball flying around the court, guys screening for each other off the ball, and running out in transition. He's effective that way, but not really as a passer, more as a finisher in those situations. So I think the combination of being a willing playmaker and buying into the system, giving up the ball, knowing it'll come back to you, that little stuff of just really selling yourself on how you can be an effective guy in the context of what they're going to try to run this year. And we've already seen it working so well. So I feel like it's going to continue just for that reason too.
Yeah, by far and away, TJ Warren's been the biggest standout for the Suns this year. And he really has been. You can debate it that he's been the better player than Devin Booker through the first 3 games, which is kind of crazy to say. But my second standout here, it might be the same for you as well, Brennan, but Devin Booker is my second standout so far through 3 games. He's averaging 29.3 points per game, 6.7 assists, while attempting 8.7 free throw attempts and 8.5 threes per game at a 40% clip, shooting 50.9% from the field and 18 field goal attempts. So the efficiency in Igor's offense looks legit so far. I think that efficiency is going to spike up now within this new system. So what do you think through the first 3 games about Booker and his offensive output, but also just if we want to look at the turnovers here too, 6 turnovers was a negative, but I think if they had a legitimate starting point guard, I think those numbers would really be down and also his points would be even higher.
Yeah, I actually don't. I did not have Booker on the standouts just because I don't think he's necessarily done enough yet just to like surpass expectations or really rise above what I was expecting. He's fit well. He's been nice. Obviously, I think the real thing that I would look at if I was going to make the case for him is just that fourth quarter against the Mavericks was up there with the best just condensed maybe one quarter or even when you look at the last 5 minutes for him stretches that I've seen him put together. He basically single-handedly took that game and put it away for the Suns. So that type of clutch performance I think was was nice to see. But other than that, I mean, the assist percentage is huge. It's been nice to see him stay efficient, even on nights where the Suns haven't been able to keep up with the other teams, Denver and Golden State, that they got blown out by. But altogether, I think it's kind of been more of the same for the most part outside of that fourth quarter against Dallas.
Really quickly, before I go to your second standout here, Brent, I wanted to ask about just Booker's efficiency. True shooting percentage is at 66.2%. Field goal percentage is 50.9%. Obviously, those won't be as sustainable through the season with how much volume he puts up. But do you think, like I asked about PJ with his shot, do you think that this efficiency from Booker, with how big of a spike it's been in both categories, is going to be legit and carries over for the next few weeks?
I do. I mean, I don't see why it couldn't. The biggest thing for me, it's been the struggle for his entire career. Part of the reason that his field goal percentage alone wasn't as high as you kind of hoped a lot of the time when you'd look at it, is that he's shooting 67% at the rim so far this year.
Oh, wow.
That's huge. He was below 60. He was like legitimately below average doing that last year. That's always been the biggest knock on him, that he didn't have the athleticism or the you know, strength when he got run into by the big men down there to finish over and around them. He's doing that this year against, you know, I mean, it's not like he's played nobody, right? Damian Jones had an awesome game last night. Draymond Green's incredible. Even Nikola Jokic is a big guy inside. Paul Millsap had a good game, and you know, DeAndre Jordan the same on Wednesday. So he's played a pretty solid group of big men and been able to do that. So if that can continue, I see no reason why his overall efficiency can't do the same.
Might as well throw it back to you, Brandon, for your second standout. Who's it going to be for you?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I didn't really have like another guy that altogether was just exceeding expectations for me. I want to see a little bit more out of Mikal Bridges before I put him in this category. He's played 31 minutes. It's tough for me to get that excited about him against the rest of the guys who actually played every night. I think, though, DeAndre Ayton's defense, it's been inconsistent for sure. There's been a lot. They're having him drop back against pick and rolls, and he has not executed even as well as he did in the preseason. After, I don't even remember. Do you remember exactly how many blocks he had in the preseason? It was somewhere in the double digits, right?
I think it was near 10.
Yeah, and he's only through three games. Again, like, small sample. The statistics are kind of silly to use, but it's starting to even out now. Three games isn't nothing. He's only at a 0.6% block rate, which is even lower than it was in college, kind of right back down to where you're just kind of concerned that it's not where it needs to be, knowing how the Suns want to play defense, that things are going to funnel back toward him. And with how bad some of the guards have been on defense, he really is going to need to be at the top of his game on that side of the floor for them to be effective. And he just hasn't been there as an interior defender, but I think overall on defense, the effort he's playing with a lot of the time, getting back in transition, he's been rebounding pretty well. The statistics show him outside of block rate as being pretty effective. He's at that by far the highest defensive plus minus on the team of guys who have really played a lot. He's at 2.7 there, plus 18 total net rating, which individual net rating is super tough because it's kind of like individual plus minus, where it's so easy to fluctuate from night to night and can be dependent on who you're playing with and who you're playing against more than anything. But even with the getting destroyed by Nikola Jokic and running into foul trouble, he's still been effective by statistical measures. So I think altogether he's been better than I would have guessed through three games. If you had asked me in like June when they drafted him, how do you think his first three games will go? I think I would have been okay with this. So I think he deserves some credit.
Just really quickly for people who don't know, his stat line through three games is 14.3 points, 10.7 rebounds, 4 assists, 0.7 steals, and the 0.3 blocks, which is kind of a big red flag we saw from Arizona last year. But I don't want to pivot too far away from your point there, Brennan, but like you said about DeAndre Ayton's defensive woes coming back in again, do you think we see less of Ryan Harrison moving forward and more of guys like Trevor Ariza and Mikal Bridges playing next to Ayton? Because if you play Anderson a lot of minutes next to Ayton, it's going to be even worse than it is now.
Yeah, I think you can definitely do it against some matchups. I think Golden State, maybe not, because they play two bigs, even though it doesn't seem like they do, because Draymond Green's so versatile. There's some teams you're going to be able to make it work against, and there's some like Denver and Golden State, Memphis, Utah, where you can't. But I think I hope that we'll see them continue to tinker.
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch for. And I think moving forward, it's going to be something to watch for, I guess, with Ryan Anderson's minutes. And then you look at Trevor Ariza's minutes. Mikal Bridges is only at 10.3 through three games, and that's going to definitely rise up. So before we go to our next segment here, I know we have some local advertisements we want to get to.
Yeah, I want to tell people about MyBookie. It's a new one for you guys. Ever since Evan and I started doing this podcast, people have been asking us for advice. I told you guys a couple weeks ago about somebody who was bothering my mom about getting a hold of me after he found the podcast through her. It's usually what team to bet on, who's going to win. I don't always know that. I know Evan doesn't either. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is super easy to use. Now, MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time, which is super easy for us because we're all still awake, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. The other thing you're going to be able to do through MyBookie, aside from that special offer for late night people, is to go in, use the promo code LOCKEDON, just like always, all one word, the name of this podcast, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account, and they will match your first deposit dollar for dollar. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, let's go ahead and transition over to the disappointments, some guys that have not panned out as well as we had hoped through three games.
Totally up to you here, Brendan. Do you want to go one or two guys here for this category?
I just have one, so whatever you want to do. I can start with mine, though.
Yeah, go right ahead. If you have one big minus guy, go right ahead.
Yeah, so I tried to not show my hand when we were doing the big guys, the good guys, but it's actually Devin Booker for me. I think that his defense yesterday was pretty much unacceptable. I mean, I know somebody said to me on Twitter when I got upset that he was losing Clay and Steph so consistently, oh, everybody does. Okay, well, great. That doesn't mean that it's not your assignment when you play the Warriors to try to stop those guys. We've seen teams do it. It's like the Warriors have literally won every single game they've ever played. So it's possible. It's obviously your job if you're playing that team to keep track of those guys off the ball, contest every shot, run around screens, run up and down the court. And he wasn't doing really any of that. Both of those guys were on him, matched up with him a bunch, Clay and Steph, and feasted. They had so many open shots, not just against Booker. I get that. But when you're the best player on the team, when you have the wherewithal that he obviously has reading the game, you're supposed to be equally a leader on defense as you are on offense. So it's not just the Warriors game. I think his turnover rate has been pretty atrocious as well, which you hinted at. He's turned the ball over on 20% of his possessions, which, again, it's small, but over the course of these three games, it's been in the 0th percentile in the league. So he's been basically the absolute worst section of players turning the ball over. So with as high of a usage as he has, for it to be that many turnovers is just pretty worrisome. And I know it's not all his fault because there hasn't been a point guard, but you can't be that bad.
Oh, definitely. Totally agree with you there. And really quickly on Booker, I want to let the listeners know his defensive rating, which accounts into how many people are on the floor and how you perform on defense. 116 defensive rating. His career low is 115. So right now it's his worst defensive year through three games so far. Just what do you think? Obviously, Brandon, it's going to hopefully get better in time, you think, but when do you think it's going to click in Booker's head that maybe down the line that it's him who might be the weakest link defensively and that might change his mindset on that?
Yeah, I think that's true because right now it's tough to really peg it on him necessarily because there are so many young pieces. It's not like there's a bunch of stalwart defenders and then Booker's just the weak link right now, but he's going to have to improve. We see it with just about every great player. To take it to the next level, they have to play. They have to buy in on both ends of the floor. And, you know, maybe eventually we'll see them start to switch more. Maybe there's different ways once the talent continues to improve, especially if there's a point guard, a defensive-minded point guard that comes in. That will obviously make his life easier on that end. But he just can't play that badly and expect to win consistently.
For sure. And I guess looking forward, it's going to be interesting to see how his turnovers also fall. how to follow his turnover, see if that rises or dips. Hopefully it dips a little bit once they get some sort of movement here at the backward situation. But the defense is definitely worrisome moving forward. I wanted to ask before I go to my biggest minus on the team so far, Brennan. With DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker, we knew pre-draft, we talk about this all the time, about how you build a roster around these two guys. What do you need if you're James Jones in this front office? You have the pieces, it looks like, with Mikal Bridges and DeAnthony Melton, who hasn't played yet, Trevor Ariza. How many of these super switchy plus defenders do you need to build around these two guys?
I think that they've done a good job of that. I think as the rest of the roster continues to grow, it won't be as big of an issue, but that's two pretty important positions to have weak defenders at. And right now the reality is both of those guys just aren't as good as they need to be. So it's going to be tough. I mean, it's going to be tough to consistently win against good teams when you don't have effective defensive players as your best offensive players. And that's just, we see that up and down. I mean, James Harden, I think, is the guy we compare Booker to so often, and maybe it fits that he was somebody who they had to craft an entire scheme around. And he also had to just completely buy into improving on that side of the ball before they really became a title contender. And when he did that, and when they created a system and put players around him that made sense, and those guys were effective too, the changes came right away.
Now for my biggest disappointment so far on the Suns roster, I'm going to combine two guys here. I kind of harped on Josh Jackson a lot last night, so if you want to hear my negative Josh Jackson takes, check out last night's episode. But I'm going to keep him off my biggest disappointment because he's definitely been one of the worst. But I think two guys I'm going to use here just to combine them together, Ryan Anderson and Tyson Chandler. Tyson Chandler, first off, obviously it's his 18th year professionally, but he looks like a guy who's taken another step back this year. His explosiveness is completely gone. He can barely get off the ground anymore. Especially in transition, Nikola Jokic was sprinting past him and getting easy layups on Saturday night. Damian Jones is about 30 feet ahead of Tyson Chandler in transition most of the time. So I don't know what to say about Tyson. He's had a really good career, but it seems like the beginning of the end for him. I don't know how soon he's out of the rotation, but with what I've seen in the minutes that I've seen of him so far, there's no way that Rashawn Holmes isn't worse than him, I don't think. So I would lean more towards Rashawn Holmes minutes moving forward and kind of put Tyson Chandler near the end of the bench and maybe look for a buyout here in February, because his legs look completely shot. He looks completely washed, so to say. And I think that there's better options on the team outside of Tyson Chandler. Maybe you could play Ryan Anderson, who I'll go into here now as the backup five, because if you look at his numbers here as a stretch four next to DeAndre Ayton, he's done not good so far. 16.7% from three, 4 points, three rebounds. He's doing good offensively on the glass, but outside of that, Brent, there's really been a lot of negatives for Ryan Anderson and a guy like Tyson Chandler. Two of the oldest guys in the roster are really starting to show their age a little bit.
I completely agree. I think Anderson, I said last night that I wrote down at one point during the game, not maybe overall, I'm not ready to pull the trigger on that completely, but when you see Anderson having as poor a game in pretty much every area as he did last night, he's basically unplayable. And it's been weird because I had a theory like early on, especially after the preseason, just that Anderson might have been uncomfortable. I think Ariza too, not playing like they did in Houston, where even a contested catch and shoot three was an acceptable, okay shot. You put it up and you run over and play transition defense and you live with the result. That's how Houston played and it worked for them. That's not how the Suns play. And I wondered if it was just affecting their rhythm. And Ariza looks comfortable for the most part. Now, he's not going to make as many shots as he did against the Mavericks every single night, but he doesn't look like he's really struggling too much, whereas Anderson really has. So I do worry about him. And I think your point about the center rotation makes a lot of sense. I think we haven't seen Holmes at all. I think he was pretty solid. He was one of the most effective from a statistical standpoint. The Suns were really good when he was in the game in the preseason, almost every night. He led a couple big runs and he just looked really good. So I want to see him more. I have a question though, along those lines for you, who do you think is the Suns' second best defender? Well, first of all, the best defender, would we say, is Ariza?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Who's their second best defender?
It's crazy to say this, but he's only played 30 minutes, but I think it's already Mikal Bridges.
Okay. And then third?
Third. Oh, now we're getting a little dicey here.
Jackson.
Maybe Josh Jackson, who I've seen in three games, I would lean toward him, but really maybe TJ.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just the problem right now. I understand harping on the playmaking, but the defense is going to continue to be a problem. Ryan Anderson is going to help the offense. He's going to hurt the defense. Tyson Chandler is an older player. Even Rashawn Holmes, I think it's good to give him a chance, but he's never been a super effective defensive player either. So that's just going to be a problem going forward. But before Evan and I each give you one thing we're going to watch for in the Lakers game tomorrow night, which, as he said, we'll both be at, I just wanted to, one more time, I don't want to bother you guys with constantly asking for advertising, but I do just want to continue to make that message clear. We are always looking. We are always excited about local businesses. I haven't said this on the podcast before, but I'm also an intern over at the Phoenix Business Journal. I'm super into business stuff. I know a lot of the local companies, and I would love to talk to you guys further about coming up with something that's going to be the best for your brand. Evan, I know, is on the same page. So reach out to us on Twitter, reach out to us on emails, which is linked to our Twitter accounts, comment section on Bright Side of the Sun, if that's how you're finding this podcast. However you can come up LinkedIn. I know we both have pages. Like, however you want to talk to us, however works for you, please reach out. We are open for business, and we are totally excited to have a local business in the slot of these other ads to make it more personalized for you guys, our audience, to be able to make use of the products and services that we pitch. So I know you've been hearing it for weeks, but we do want to continue to harp on it just so you guys know that we really, truly do want to make that happen as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Absolutely. I was going to say just about that really quickly. We've had a few talks before with some local businesses in the air before, but if you guys want to be a part of the Locked On Suns family as a main sponsor, that'd be really awesome to see. And like Brennan said, all of our contact information is available around social media platforms. So make sure to go and check us out. But before we move to our last segment here, I wanted to tell you guys also about the Locked On NBA National Show and our Locked On NBA Net Twitter at Locked On NBA Net, which is where you can follow all of the Locked On hosts like myself, Brennan, and others. But before we even get to that, I wanted to tell you guys about the Locked On NBA NBA show with David Locke. And they have actually secured a special guest, a special guest for the next, throughout the NBA season. That's Sam Amick of The Athletic and Ben Galber of Sports Illustrated, two of the top heavy-hitting writers in the NBA. And they're both going to be in your airwaves on Locked On NBA every single week through the NBA season, which is really exciting news for us. So our brand continues to grow and explode across the NBA platform. So make sure to go listen to Locked On NBA with David Locke and Josh Lloyd and all those guys over there. They do awesome work as usual every single day, Monday through Friday. But also make sure to go follow at Locked On NBA Net, like I said earlier, with guys like me, Brendan, John Corrales of Locked On Celtics, Adam Mares of Locked On Nuggets. Any Locked On host you've heard of, you're going to find them on Locked On NBA Net. All of our Twitter accounts are synced on there, and you'll get rapid news from every single game, every single news that breaks on any NBA team. You'll be able to easily find it over at Locked On NBA Net, so make sure to go follow them over there. But before we go into our final segment here, Brennan, and it's our quick Los Angeles Lakers preview, I want to get this out of the way quickly. We touched on it last night, but the Lakers are an even faster team than the Warriors and the Nuggets, and both those teams destroy the Suns, so to say, as far as the points go. What are you expecting for tomorrow's game? Because I think for me, I'm expecting one, a really, really big LeBron James game. I think he's probably going to drop 40-plus points. But then I also expect a really high-scoring game. It really could be a one where it's first one to 130 or 140 wins.
Yeah, their game last night, they both, them and the Spurs, scored 140 points. It was an overtime game, sure, but their defense is just as bad as the Suns, if not worse. I don't know. Two pretty bad defensive teams playing against each other. I think the competitive spirit will be pretty high because they're both young teams. Obviously, if you're a group of young guys like the Suns, LeBron coming into your building is probably pretty exciting, and you want to do better at least in the last two games, right? And it's at home, which seemed to have a pretty big impact in the opener on last Wednesday. So, but before we go, I do want to share their pace, which is pretty incredible. They're only third because these teams are going crazy through a week with their pace and just offensive efficiency getting to the line. The Lakers have averaged 107.6, basically 108 possessions per game. And the Suns have averaged, that's third, the Lakers. The Suns are 25th in the league with 99.3 possessions per game, less than 100 compared to 108. And even the Warriors, who we are usually near the top and we think of as playing pretty fast, they tore up the Suns in transition last night, are only at 101.5, basically 102 possessions per game. They're right in the middle of the league right now. So this season has been incredible for pace and offensive efficiency. The Lakers are one of the main teams to be leading that charge. And it's going to be really painful if the Suns keep playing as badly as they have in transition against LA and LeBron tomorrow night.
What's your early predictions before we get out of here? Because I know we'll be recording right after the Lakers game tomorrow inside Talkster Resort Arena, but any early predictions for tomorrow's game? Because I'm personally, I know people are probably expecting this answer after what I led with a few minutes ago, but I think LeBron's going to have a really big game with the Lakers, probably his best one so far. And I think unless they improve their defense somehow, I think LeBron and those guys are just going to see the transition defense, how bad it is, and just exploit that to the major degree.
Yeah, I would say maybe the one thing is Rondo and Ingram are both going to be out. So that'll be helpful. But they just have so much ball handling and shooting talent without those guys. I mean, all things considered, Rondo is not that big of an absence for them. We're going to see more of Lonzo, which I think for the Suns is a problem, because I think what he can do is a lot more worrisome than what Rondo does. So I would say maybe 125-110 Lakers win. I just think they have, I mean, no team has an answer for LeBron, but we just did that exercise with the Suns' best defensive players. Trevor Ariza is not the big, strong type of defender like an Andre Iguodala that you think will do well against LeBron, even though he does have such a history of being great on defense. LeBron's not the right matchup for him. I don't think they'll have any answer for LeBron, and I don't think they'll really have any answer for their offense in general. So I'd say something like, yeah, 125-110.
I'm totally in agreement with you there. I think it's going to be a double-digit loss for the Suns to drop in the 1-3. But interesting prop here before we go. Who has the most points, LeBron or Devin Booker?
I think that LeBron does. I don't know exactly who defends Booker. I think he'll probably have a nice game. He's like we talked about. He's been pretty solid on offense every night so far. But I think overall LeBron will just have a pretty monster game.
Yeah, I'm going to go LeBron with 44. So that kind of tells you. Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those.
Right. LeBron. Well, hopefully. I've never seen LeBron live. Have you?
Yeah, I did last year when he came into town. But that was Cavaliers and LeBron's fans. Now you combine Lakers fans and LeBron fans together. It might be a road game tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be hectic either way, but I'm excited.
For sure. That'll be it for today's episode, guys. Appreciate you for listening in. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow. Like I said earlier, live from Talkster Resort Arena, following the Lakers and LeBron James going up against